Why did Frederick III risk his realm of Saxony to protect Martin Luther and the developing reforms of the church? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April is Frederick the Wise, Seen and Unseen Lives of Martin Luther's Protector. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Frederick the Wise by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April, Frederick the Wise.
He said, "I expect to die in bed. My successor will die in prison, and his successor will die a martyr. His successor will pick up the shards of a ruined society and help rebuild civilization, as the church has so often done in human history."
This is a solid case. Classical historians would sell their grandmothers to get this kind of corroborating evidence for the authorship of secular works of antiquity.
There's countless stories of the praise and worship leaders who end up losing their faith altogether, and it's no wonder. This is a dangerous place to find yourself as the manipulator of both God and man.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love Issues Etc.
Is it the fault of social media? I mean, there's no shortage of social media being used to publicly shame celebrities, ordinary people. You know what it's like. And you see it running through your news feed all the time. Sometimes you're attracted to it. Sometimes you're indignant. Sometimes you're judgmental of that. And sometimes you're judgmental of, well, of even the fact that it's appearing in your news feed. Hans Feeney calls it judgment porn. He's going to join us here in a few minutes to talk about social media and judgment porn. Welcome back to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll be talking with Pastor Hans Feeney. He's written something for The Federalist titled "We're Addicted to Judgment Porn." And then it's Christ in the Old Testament on this Thursday afternoon, Genesis chapter 35 with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. Joining us to talk about social media and judgment porn, Pastor Hans Feeney. He's a regular guest, pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, author of a recent column for The Federalist titled "We're Addicted to Judgment Porn." Hans, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So in what sense, I mean, just to kind of define this term carefully, can we call much of our interaction on social media pornographic?
Yeah, well, in the article, I kind of start off by giving this definition of pornography that a college professor of mine gave, which, for whatever reason, always just kind of stuck with me. And I don't know how we got on the subject in class, but this was early 2000s when I was in college, and this was right around the time that reality TV was really becoming quite popular, and in particular, the show Fear Factor was on, and so it was just enthralling audiences with the notion of watching people do all sorts of humiliating things, burying themselves in bugs and eating all sorts of disgusting animal parts and whatnot. And my professor made the comment that that this stuff was pornographic because the audience was seeking satisfaction in another person's humiliation, which I thought it always kind of stuck with me. And I always thought that was just a really precise, on-target definition of pornography. So in its traditional sense, obviously, pornography is very much a sexual thing. But I think what is oftentimes so enthralling for people about that is that here you have people who are put on display in their most private, intimate moments are there for you to take pleasure in them, and oftentimes being sort of mistreated in this sense. Whether there's sort of varying degrees of that mistreatment. But I think that's ultimately the core of it is when you're going with that definition of pornography is essentially seeking enjoyment in another person's humiliation. I think very much social media very quickly becomes a place that is highly pornographic. Kind of one of the things I describe in the article is to me, I find it very similar to this phenomenon you're having in schools nowadays, or this difficulty you're having in schools, where a young lady will be pressured into taking naked pictures of herself, and she'll send them to her boyfriend, and then they just immediately start getting passed around school, and everyone is sort of feasting upon the humiliation that came about on a kind of this moment of weakness that this girl had. So whenever you have stories that come into the news about someone doing something that they shouldn't have, oftentimes in similar circumstances where this is a person who was not at the best moment of their life. This is not a person who was intending for this shame to be made public, and yet it is, and everyone just sort of feasts upon it and passes the stories around and finds a great deal of pornographic satisfaction in this sort of lowliness of another human being.
So give us a couple examples of kind of recent, well-known opportunities for judgment porn in social media.
Yeah, I think I talk about a couple of them in the article. One of them was there was this ESPN reporter named Britt McHenry who got her car towed, and she showed up at the tow place, and she was very angry about it, and she was on camera, and she said some very reprehensible and disparaging things to the lady who was working out of view of the camera, criticizing her appearance and her education level. And it was, I mean, it certainly is not a way in which I would not at all obviously be happy with one of my sons if, you know, if he acted this way and treated another person this way. But it was also the fact that this was obviously something that she was doing in a moment of frustration. But the main thing is it was something where if she could have taken it back and made sure that this footage wasn't going to get out, if she had known that the footage was going to get out, she wouldn't have acted that way. And so people kind of seized upon her, and certainly one of the more reprehensible moments of her life, and acting as though, you know, without any sort of thought for would we really want the worst, most pathetic, most awful moments of our lives to be made public the same way that hers had. So that would certainly be an example. I talk in the article a little bit as well about the email leaks from Sony Studios and how Sony co-chair Amy Pascal was having to deal with a lot of fallout from some stuff that she privately wrote to other people that was not always the nicest stuff in the world, and some of it which was sort of labeled rather racially insensitive. But it was all stuff that was illegally stolen. I mean, this is information that came about on account of hacking, and yet people still pass the information around and still, you know, criticize and lambast her for the way that she was speaking about people. And I think probably another example from a few years back would be Michael Richards, you know, who played Kramer on Seinfeld. And he was doing a comedy set at, I think it was the Laugh Factory, and he had some people interrupting his show, and he completely went bonkers and started just hurling a racist tirade at these guys who were speaking during his set, and very deplorable stuff. But it was also, it's kind of, again, one of these things where this is a very low moment in the guy's life. It's a moment of absolute humiliation. We all would have known he would have given, you know, would have gladly liquidated much of his Seinfeld fortune in order to get that footage off the internet, and wouldn't have wanted us to see it, and would have just said, please just don't watch it, if he could have said that to everyone who was passing the video around. And yet people still pass it around, and they still, because there's so much satisfaction that's found in judging this person for being in this moment of weakness, and judging this person in his humiliated state.
It's a very it's a paradoxical situation we find ourselves in here. And let me explain what I mean when it comes to social media. For a long time after social media became the prevailing way that we interacted with one another, and it certainly is. I just think, you know, it is the way we interact with one another, especially long distance nowadays. People would say, well, you know, this isn't the real world in here in cyberspace. The rules are kind of all suspended because it's social media. It's a free for all. It's kind of, you know, just the wild, wild west, you know, where there's no law and no one to enforce it. That certainly is true in a sense. But that was kind of used as an excuse for all of this. Look, this isn't real life. So lay off, you know, don't judge me because this isn't real life. I completely disagree with that. But I also reject the alternative, which is that somehow, especially for Christians, social media is a place where you can't ever discuss anything negative or ever criticize anything or anyone at all. I reject that as well. That's a paradox. Where do we find the safe place to stand between the two, Hans?
Yeah, I think one of the important things always to sort of remember in this type of stuff is, as I talk about in the article, there's not a scriptural prohibition against judgment. There's a scriptural prohibition against certain types of judgment and sort of Pharisaical judgment. And there's also the scriptural teaching of vocation. So, you know, whether or not you have been given to judge in this case, or whether you've even been given to speak in this instance. So I think certainly one distinction you would have is, and one question just simply to ask is, this act or this sin or these words that are up for consideration, that are up for us to weigh in and say these are good or not good words to speak, or these are good or not good things to do, did these come from someone who was intending for these things to be public, who's standing by these things and defending them? So if that's the case, then I think certainly we say, all right, well, this is fair game to discuss. This is fair game, certainly for Christians to speak about should we as Christians view these things? You know, so for example, if a politician makes something public and says, this is what I believe, this is the policy that I'm going to enforce on a certain issue, then we could certainly look at that and say, all right, that's a public statement. This is a public policy. How, as Christians, should we respond to that? You know, whereas you know, it's the distinction between that and if you don't agree with a politician's ideological views, versus you know if some correspondence of his or hers was leaked or something of that nature, and standing in judgment there is a much different thing. I think that's a big part of it. It's just kind of this question of, you know, what the words that have offended us, or that we believe we need to speak against, were those words actually intended for us to hear them? And if they were, then I would certainly say they're fair game to respond to. And likewise, I think, yeah, sort of the other question is, you know, what is your vocation in this instance, and for whose sake are you speaking? So if you have someone who's done something sinful, is talking about it on social media going to bring that person to repentance, or is it going to sort of clear up the issue for people who may have been misled? And I think, kind of going back to the case of the Britt McHenry case, this is probably a good example of something that clearly doesn't fit either of those descriptions. So here is a woman who did a quite terrible thing and treated another human being very deplorably. But people sort of clamoring for her to get fired on social media, hashtagging about this on Twitter, and just eviscerating her left and right, was that actually going to do anything to bring her to repentance? And I would certainly say no. It's hard to make an argument that would be the case. And then the other thing is, was anyone confused that this was a good or a bad thing that she did? Or did everyone pretty much know that this was bad? And if everyone knew that this was bad, if there's no confusion in the air, then we don't need to sort of, you know, stretch the boundaries of the, you know, this is for the sake of the children type of argument thing. You know, it's a little bit like when Dr. Phil will have people on his show, and he'll get into his moral grandstanding Dr. Phil mode, you know, and he'll say, you know, you've been beating your wife, you can't beat your wife, and then everyone just cheers him on and applauds and says, you tell him, Dr. Phil, as though we don't all know that this is bad, as though anyone is in any way, shape, or form confused about the immorality of domestic abuse in an instance like that. So I think that's those are probably helpful parameters to follow. And obviously, this is the whole point of identifying sin from a scriptural perspective, is that we recognize that we do this, we ought to do this for the same reason that God does it, which is to bring us to repentance, to show us our need for the cross, and to then proclaim to us how that sin has been put away in the blood of Jesus and been erased from the memory of God through the crucifixion. And so really, as Christians in judgment, all that we're doing is seeking to treat sin the way that God treats sin, which is to identify it when it needs to be identified, in order to speak forgiveness to that person, which is something I wasn't at all seeing in, for example, the Britt McHenry case.
So the Lutheran distinction here that is made about private sins that ought to be covered up,
right?
or private statements that ought to be covered up by Christian brothers, and public sins unrepented of, obviously, or public statements that need to be responded to publicly, of course, within one's vocation, is very, very helpful for everybody.
Yes, I would certainly say so.
Talk a little bit about the, I think, with the rise of social media and what you call judgment porn, there is this indignation trigger that we all have kind of developed. It's a judgment trigger. It's an offense trigger, but mostly, I think, indignation trigger. We go on social media not looking for, as I did in the very early days of social media, I would just go looking for people's baby videos. I mean, that's really, honestly, it was the days of unbelievable innocence, or their cat videos or something like that, just something to watch to amuse myself. It was just a kind of little hobby. Now I often go on seeking to have my indignation trigger flipped.
Right. Yeah, I think that is certainly a big problem in this. Is that I even noticed this when I'm on Facebook, up in kind of the top right hand corner of the website. You'll have these various stories, you know, that are in the news, and it almost seems like they sort of target them for precisely that thing, you know. So if you have, a happy story, there aren't really any happy stories on there. Or if you have something tragic, you know, like the earthquake that just happened in Nepal, that may show up. But usually it's, here's something that various celebrities said about a thing that made other people mad, and so then they apologized or whatever it is. You know, I figured it would be about 48 hours or so after the Bruce Jenner interview, before some celebrity was criticized for pointing out that simply calling yourself a woman does not actually make you a woman. And so I think within that time frame, I saw there was an actress named Alice Eve who was criticized for saying something precisely along those lines. It's almost like this stuff has just become designed precisely for that, so that you hop on the internet, you want to see if anyone's written you messages, whatever it is. But the main thing is, what am I going to get mad at today, and what am I going to make? How am I going to puff up my chest and be full of my own sense of righteousness because someone did something that I never would have done? And I think there is honestly something that is quite addicting about that. There is perhaps even some kind of chemical release in the brain that comes from just spewing your venom and judgment at people, that where we almost become physically addicted to the sense of euphoria that we get from this stuff. I think it is truly a massive problem.
But the other thing that we've seen here, and it's often the first reaction, is to blame the mechanism of social media. The medium of social media, saying that it is somehow inherently broken, that it leads to this kind of stuff. And look, as I don't know about you, Hans, but as a Christian, all it's done is given me and everybody else involved more opportunity to do what we would have been doing anyway had we had the opportunity to do it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, the internet is the greatest and the worst thing ever invented. It just sort of depends on how you use it. And yeah, and absolutely, I think both you and I have really been blessed with the work that we've both done in being able to proclaim the gospel in situations and scenarios where we wouldn't have been able to do that. I mean, with the stuff I do with Lutheran satire, you know, if I had gone many years before the internet made this stuff possible, if I had tried to go to a district board meeting and tried to explain how it is that I'd like to get a grant, you know, to do videos that are going to make fun of things and teach the Lutheran faith that way, I'm sure I probably would have had a board full of people who barely knew how to check their email, just sort of looking at me, going, "This is what on earth are you talking about?" And yet the internet has provided that, and this is very much nowadays how people socialize. There's oftentimes Lutheran pastors will be criticized for, you know, you spend too much time on blogs or in social networking, when the reality is this is where actual real social networking happens. People don't hang out outside their houses anymore. People don't go to the Rotary Club or the Lions Club that much anymore. So this is how people interact. So this very much is where the real world is located now. But I don't know that it's necessarily so much different than it has been in other situations and circumstances. I mean, I would imagine that, you know, when people would gather wherever they'd get, you know, they used to talk, you know, back the kind of a concept of what they would call sort of water cooler moments, you know, where people would be talking about a TV show and they'd gather around the water cooler at work and they'd talk about it. Or, you know, if there was gossip going around at work, you know, this was these are kind of the places you'd happen, you know, in the break room, people are talking about this stuff. And or, you know, talking about whatever news stories they heard that made them mad for the week. You know, wherever people gathered, they would do that in wherever those places were. And so the mere fact that people now do that without geographically being located in the same place, I don't think is necessarily that substantially different. And it makes it easier for us to do it, and it makes it easier for us to do it more often, and to do it with more kind of like-minded people. But I don't know that it's really. So I don't know that kind of this phenomenon of what I've called judgment porn is really that substantially different from people just sitting around a coffee table or a church basement or you know, a school cafeteria just gossiping. It just enables them to do it faster and in greater abundance.
Then, with only about a minute here, you say the answer here is not to go cold turkey, but
right.
to a little. Exercise a modicum of self-control, and to when possible and when necessary to cover up the sin of your brothers. With about a minute, what's that about?
Yeah, well, I think the main thing is the sin that's been brought before you was this intended for you to see? Was the person who did this, did they want you to see this? And if the answer is no, that's probably fairly good to just to act as though it didn't happen and to recognize, yeah, people sin and they say and do things they shouldn't do. But if this person has repented and they recognize that what they've done is wrong, then you just do what Christians do, and you treat the sin like God treats the sin, and you treat it as though it no longer exists. So I think that's certainly a major thing. And then the other thing simply to remember is, as Christians, whenever we engage in judgment, there is no one on the face of the planet we can judge and we can get angry at and whose sins we want to broadcast in the world. No matter how heinous those sins are, none of those people are worse sinners than we are. And none of them are any less valued and cherished by the blood of Christ. And so that's an important thing for us to always remember, is that if we are in a situation where we need to address sin, we're doing this in order to bring this person who has fallen the love and forgiveness and mercy of Christ. And if that's not front and center in everything that we're doing, then we ought to just walk away from the whole enterprise.
Pastor Hans Feeney is pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, author of a recent column for The Federalist titled We're Addicted to Judgment Porn. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Hans, thank you.
Thank you so much.
When we come back, it's Christ in the Old Testament, our regular weekly series with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. We'll be in the 35th chapter of Genesis. Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
He's the most Lutheran man in the world.
I'm not always in Pensacola, Florida, but when I am, I attend Emmanuel Lutheran Church.
Congregation of Emmanuel Lutheran Church of Pensacola, Florida invites you to join us for divine services on Sundays at 8 or 10:30. Sunday school and Bible class at 9:15. Whether you're in Pensacola to enjoy the white sandy beaches of the Emerald Coast or for military training, we invite you to join us. Jesus is here. Word, water, bread and wine for you.
Emmanuel, God with us.
Stay Lutheran, my friends.
Hollywood's attitude toward Christianity, the Bible's influence on the U.S. Constitution, the decline of biblical preaching, the connection between biblical illiteracy and Western morality. You'll find these essays and more in the new book, The Word They Still Shall Let Remain, The Place of the Holy Scriptures in the Faith and Life of Confessional Lutherans. Check it out at shop.logia.org. The Word They Still Shall Let Remain, shop.logia.org.